Hello and welcome to the Reign of Blood podcast, brought to you by the Reign of Blood Festival team. So this is the podcast where you get a behind-the-scenes look at the con and the Sharps and Bloody Kingsters all over the world who will be celebrating with us. So this podcast is intended for mature audiences who have an interest in, well, blood and Sharps-based kinks only. So if that's not you, then this podcast definitely is not for you. So these are real stories from real kinksters, and so they may contain discussions surrounding things like health, mental health, kink, blood, self-harm, traumatic experiences, and more. So if you're having a rough day or these topics could be distressing for you, then we would advise you to come back when you're more ready to enjoy the topic with us.
Hey, my bloody friends. It's lovely to speak to you again tonight and in my dungeon, chatting to me from across the sea. That is the really amazing Rhapsody and Banana. And we're really excited to welcome them to the Reign of Blood. They are coming onto our TOPS panel and they're going to have a chat with us tonight a little bit about their Sharps journey and answer some of my hopefully not too hard questions about where they've come from. So first of all, welcome guys. It's really an honor and a privilege to have you in my space, even if it's miles apart. It feels like you are right here in my lounge and I'm so excited.
Thank you. We are too.
Yeah, thanks for having us. Not many people get the summoning ritual this correct.
I've been working on my skills. We might not have electricity, but apparently our magic is very strong in Africa. So guys, it's lovely to connect with you, and it's lovely to connect over a kink that's very special to me. And it's always a privilege to find people that share the love of this this amazing craft, I think, and art, I think, more than just a kink. And I think you both have taken it to the level of art. Let's backtrack a little bit, and can you guys just give our listeners an idea of who you are and how you found yourself in the amazing world of Sharps?
Sure. So I'm Rhapsody in Blue. I've been kinky forever, since adolescence. But the scene that I'm engaged in the most is the Michigan scene in the United States. And it's been about 6 years, 7 years or so that I've been really engaged here. And I found needles about the same time, and Sharps play about the same time as I got involved, and fell madly in love, and then met this one through needles, actually, is how we found each other. So I'll let you.
Oh yeah. And I'm, my handle is Banana Rampage. And I kind of slipped into, blood play, not knowing that the things that I was exploring pre-entry to the kink scene was actually that kind of exploration, you know, putting needles under my skin and, you know, burning and peeling just to kind of figure out, like, oh, this is interesting. I can make myself feel different ways. So I, and then, like, formally getting into the scene through my meeting with Rhapsody and that whirlwind of an experience.
The experience sounds lovely, and I'm really glad you guys connected. Rhapsody, I relate to that so much. One prick and I was hooked. It apparently happened more than once in my life too, but it's so much freedom and so much liberation. And Banana, your accent is so cool. I'm a little bit fangirling because it's that cool on the side. And just the way you say your name, like, you could just say your name on a podcast for half an hour for me and I'd be riveted. It's really cool.
Thank you. Flattery will get you everything.
They're that dreamy in person too. Don't get it wrong. They're that dreamy in person.
Yeah, they sound delicious, and the way they say banana beats everything every guy in my country you just put to shame. So yeah, you get my vote. And I liked what you said about the exploration. I think a lot of sharps players and a lot of people who pick up sharps are looking for a different sensation, and they don't often know what they're looking for. And I think I relate to that a lot, because I think there was a stage where I was putting pins under my fingers and you know, sewing pins. I'm not suggesting anybody do this at home, but you know, the sewing pins at school and all those kinds of things. And I think I was just testing sensation. And I think a lot of it gets labeled with self-harm. Some of it is self-harm, but there's also another section to it where it's exploring sensation and trying to understand what works for you growing up and where you fit in. And I think that there needs to be less stigma attached to it. And that's, we're trying to encourage sort of just better education so that people try these things in a safer way, because I don't think they're going to stop trying them. You couldn't have reasoned with me.
Because we know better now.
Do we? Okay, so going forward in this kink journey, you guys are both tops. Can you tell me a little bit about the dynamic that you play in and how that works for you?
Yeah, so we're both top-leaning. We switch with each other. And that's actually how we met each other. Was I was looking for a top that had a skill set that had sort of outstripped some of the people that I had been playing with. And so those relationships sort of split and amicably. But Banana is a piercer. And so they have some professional training, like a lot of professional training, obviously. but they had professional training that supported the exploration that I wanted to continue doing. And so our risk profiles were really aligned in that way. I really only bottom for Banana at this point. And that's just in the context of our very switchy, fluid, bonded intimacy that, you know, goes along with our sharps play with each other. I mostly top others who are either S-leaning, like submissive-leaning, or bottom-leaning. So I really only bottom for Banana anymore.
Yeah, I've heard them speak. I can completely understand why you've made that choice. And I'm taking notes. So on my Tinder profile from now on, I'm only looking for piercers.
Incredibly helpful skill set to have.
I was going to say it, and it comes with a lot of, I would say, positive baggage. The good ones are super into consent practices, into cleanliness, which I might lean a little bit too crazy on that. I'm very particular about how clean my case and my setup and my space is, and I think that comes from doing sharp objects as recreational as well as a professional activity.
I love that. There have been a couple of interviews where people have spoken about setups, and I think the majority of us connect with this this idea that part of the kink is the consent side. It almost becomes an admin kink in my life. Like I think there's a few pages of negotiation, and I need to know everything. All my T's are crossed and all my I's are dotted for my own head. And I actually think I get off on knowing that it's all done. Like I think it's part of the kink for me. And then just listening to a lot of the people wanting the space to be really organized, really clean, really well set up, knowing that a lot of these people have beautiful needle boxes and take huge pride in that. And, you know, I think that gold standard is important. And the more we can promote that gold standard, the more we're teaching the next generation to look at this differently. And I think there's a lot of pride that comes with having a good setup and taking care of that. I think that reflects, for me, it reflects how you're going to treat your bottom as well. If you're totally disorganized, I think the scene in my head is going to be totally disorganized as well. So yeah. I've got appreciation for that.
I totally agree. And if you spend the time to really set up, and like, when I'm really happy with my setup, I know I've got everything, so I can just really focus on the scene and not have to worry about like, oh, well, what are the things that are sterile and which ones aren't? And like, did I already mark this area and did we clean it? It's like, no, I already know. We're good to go. I can just be in that headspace the whole time and not have to worry about it at all.
I love the way you put that into words. That very relatable. So, talking about a little bit about setup and about how you set up for a scene, can you share some of your rituals or some of your tips with us, and some of the things that are important about setup to you guys?
Yeah, sure. this is one of the ones where I am like I twitch kind of thing, but. Like gloves, just like watching somebody put on gloves where it's your hands are only touching the inside of the glove and the outside of the gloves are only touching the outside of other gloves. And I don't know, something like that to me, the intentionality of it. And you kind of touched on this earlier. But like if, you know, as a top, you're putting that much intention into just putting on your gloves to make sure that nothing is contaminated, then, you know, I think that goes a long way to say what the rest of the scene is going to be.
And I think too, I mean, so I love that we're using the word ritual, because I think that a large part of the emotional prep for me is like interwoven with the physical prep.
Yeah.
That getting the tray set, counting my needles, counting out my other supplies, preparing the, you know, the surgical lubricant, like all of those kind of things are like a very quiet space for my brain. And it helps to get me into the space that I'm ready to engage with my partner, my scene partner. So like, the preparation and ritual is part of it.
Yeah, 100%. I totally. I love that. And I love that the word ritual didn't scare you. For me in this journey, I didn't find Sharps a spiritual experience in the beginning. For me, it was quite medical. And I loved the medical side of it. But the presence that I've got from topping and from bottoming has been for want of a better word, a spiritual experience. It's brought me to myself, if not a power greater than myself. And I think that, you know, the setup and everything has become part of the practice for me. And it is a bit of a ritual, and it almost sets the emotion and sets the calmness and sets the trend for what's about to happen for me. So I'm glad I didn't scare you off with my wording.
Not at all. I really like that a lot. And I think too, what Banana was talking about, where a lot of folks in this, who are into this kink, like we're into the horror and the vulnerability and the beauty and the ritual and all of those and the art. But like, there's also, I think, a Venn diagram of very like, compulsive almost, like how focused we are on cleanliness and ethics and consent and right. Because I find that the more extreme a player is, and the more edges they explore, the more stringent and careful they are ideally about all the steps it takes to get to that edge.
Yeah, I also think when you play this game for long enough, like you start to know what really can happen, and managing that risk managing that risk becomes important. And the more information you have, the more you are aware of risk, and the more things are added to my admin kink, and the more boxes I need to tick in my own head to know that I'm completing everything. I think it's easy to ignore when you don't know it, but as soon as you know it, you can't ignore it. So, like, the more information I've gathered, the better I've become with setup, and the better I've become with management, and the more it matters to me, because my bottoms matter to me, I think, as well. So I want them to have the best experience.
Agreed.
Okay, so talking about this, you obviously still you bottom mostly for each other, but you obviously top for other people. What is important to you in a vetting? How do you look at vetting somebody? And what are some red flags for you? And what are some green flags for you?
Do you want to go first?
Ooh, I was going to say Rhapsody tends to, at least lately, has been topping for other people in the kink space a lot more often. And I've been, I mean, of course, because, you know, I work as a professional body piercer, it is a similar kind of experience. You know, somebody coming in, and a lot of the times for me, it's a complete stranger is consenting for me to puncture their flesh and put shiny bits of metal in the wound, and then they thank me for it and feel better about themselves. And managing a complete stranger and, like, going through that kind of consent is a little bit more clinical because of the paperwork involved. But I find a lot of enjoyment out of getting somebody calm and confident about themselves to do, you know, because sometimes somebody who has never had a piercing before is, I want a 12-gauge needle through each of my nipples. And you have zero context for that. And it's very rewarding for me as a, I guess this is a service top kind of scenario when I'm doing body piercing. But it is also incredibly rewarding, and to be able to work with so many different people, and, you know, because everybody's needs are different. And so that's where most of my experience comes from.
My vetting green flags, and I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but this may also be one, but people who do research ahead of time before approaching me.
Oh, gosh.
And I think that works in a professional setting for you as well. That,
absolutely.
Like, I saw your work on Instagram, or I saw your work on Fed, or, right, like, and I'm interested. But green flags for me are always bottoms who are not looking to me to dispense for them a kink or experience, but are coming in and asking really good questions.
Yeah.
They're not just, like, taking for granted that, like, I'm giving them good information. They're doing their own research.
Yeah.
They're asking really informed questions. It always makes me really, really nervous when I have a bottom who's like, oh, do whatever you want. Oh, it's fine. Right?
The blind trust. It's like, no, do not blindly trust me. You don't,
you don't know me.
Yourself in my dungeon. I can do whatever I want to you.
Oh my goodness. So when people are coming and saying, hey, I talked to this person who's bottomed for you, or I've seen some of your photos and I'm really into that, and I spoke to your bottom from those pictures, like, those are always super big green flags for me.
Ooh, and when they bring their own
supplies. I love that.
Goodness.
That one too.
What a huge green flag. Hey, I want you to top for me, and I've already bought 118-gauge needles. Like, yes, please. Let's go.
I love that. For me, it's an accountability thing. I always want to know that somebody can take accountability if something goes wrong. And at some stage, something is going to go wrong. So, you know, we're not ever going to pretend that life is perfect. Yeah, I mean, you're literally talking to the girl who tattooed her own boobs by accident, and knows better. So, you know, we really want to do this as an intimate play and enjoy each other's time, but we want to stay friends afterwards. So what does accountability look like? And the stuff that you're mentioning, the research and the quest for their own knowledge. knowledge and the quest for their own understanding, and then the intent is that they really are interested in the action that they are participating in, and it's not so much they just want to see my tattooed boobs, but they actually want to be pierced. I think is really important to me too. So that all relates and lands really well with me. Can you guys talk to me a little bit about what you would describe as your most memorable kink experience?
Oof.
Yeah. I mean, the one that immediately comes to mind is the second scene that Rhapsody and I had ever done. She topped me at my shop in, the piercing shop that I was at prior. And we used, this is the one with the mortuary needles.
Yeah,
we had some 2 millimeter thick mortuary needles, which, if you have never had the exalted experience of feeling these, there is no polish on them. And the drag is, it sent me into another realm. And at this point, we had not negotiated any sort of sexual contact or anything. We were very convinced that this would be a platonic play partnership only. And there was a single needle, one of these 2 mil mortuary needles that she put into my sternum. And I remember just letting out I don't even know how to describe this noise, but it was so visceral. And we met eyes, and in that moment, we both immediately like,
oh shit.
I want to tear your skin off now.
In like a romantic way.
Yeah. But we did not discuss this, and now I am stuck full of, oh my gosh, almost a dozen of these needles in my chest, and I am completely unable to make good choices.
And so we had that scene where we both definitely felt the emotional and romantic, like, thunderclap.
Mm-hmm.
And because we had negotiated it, and both of us feel really strongly about not negotiating when you're in an altered state, we basically got to not touch each other the rest of the night and not make out and not do any of those things because we hadn't addressed those things in our right mind. And we had other partners, one of which is still in our lives, right? So we needed to make sure that we were being really careful ethically. But goddamn, was it tricky. That was a hard
really
one.
Hard.
Damn, and that's yeah, well, now I'm thinking about those needles too, and I've added them to my list of have to buy in the next 6 months to try. They sound amazing.
Yeah.
I have a packet of mortuary gloves, which are also super cool. I do some CBT sharps play with them, and I just love them. But mortuary needles, I have never been exposed to. So putting that on my list right now, and I will definitely let you guys know how this goes.
Definitely.
They also go by industrial needles.
Oh, okay. Industrial needles.
Yeah.
We joke around with them.
My Tinder profile is being changed after this call, and I'm so adding all of these all of these hints to my bucket list. Like, what does a first date look like for you? Well, it's at your piercing shop, and you're gonna have to get some of these needles. No, that's lovely, and the
tacos and margaritas.
How long ago was that, guys?
It was the mortuary needles. Our first date was tacos, margaritas, and face needles.
I don't feel like I'm living. I really don't feel like I'm living. Like, I really feel like I'm gonna have to come for some help, because it sounds like the perfect dream date for a first date. I haven't done a lot of face needles. We haven't done a lot of face needles. We're starting to explore them, and we're really excited by them. So we're still on the terrified to pierce the cheeks, done it once. I have a switchy sister who is a scientist, so she does an enormous amount of research. So she always has this like 6 month panic when I suggest something. So 6 months ago, I said to her, "That's it, we're going to pierce my cheeks and we're going to start doing face needles." And she was like, "Hell no, it's not going to happen." And then 2 weeks ago, I finally convinced her that with all the research that she's done, and that, you know, we had all the safety in place, and we were shining huge spotlights through my cheeks to make sure she didn't hit a vein, and we had like all the backup there for her, and there was one tiny trickle of blood afterwards, like one tiny little drop, and she was absolutely thrilled that she hadn't killed me, and she's agreed to now tackle the next level of face needles. So we're working on it. It's not yet a margarita and taco date, but hopefully one day we will progress to a more adventurous stage with face needles. Is there any advice you can give us for face needles, seeing as I'm talking to you guys about that now?
My thoughts, and it kind of already sounds like you guys know what you're doing with all that research, because knowing the anatomy and stuff like that is really important. But if I had to give some like kind of cut and dirty just advice for face needles, is start small gauge for needles, because we tend to scar and bruise significantly more on our faces, and expect a lot of blood, which is one of my favorite parts of it. The bridge right in between the eyes is one of my absolute all-time favorite places to get pierced, because of just how much blood spews from a single 16 gauge hole in the middle of my face.
I think too, for face needles, just like when you're doing body needles, you look at like the tops of the thighs and the upper arm, and those are more meaty spots that are more easy to process, I think, just generally. That's obviously not a rule for everybody, but for face needles, eyebrows are super high intensity, but they're also slightly lower risk, because you can pinch the flesh and really get a good insertable surface.
You don't have to worry about burying the needle.
Yeah, and then the other spot that I find fairly easy to process is along the chin and jawline. And that's also a good spot where you can usually pinch a good amount of flesh. Some of the other spots, there's not as much skin or meat.
Yeah.
So those are the ones that I really like for first time needles. I actually just did needles, face needles for my girlfriend for the first time, like last week. And the pictures are on Fed and Instagram. They're very gory and very beautiful.
Yep. She looks like she got skinned alive, like some crazy bee horror flick.
There's something about needles in my face that make me feel incredibly pretty. I haven't had a lot of them, but it was a feeling like normally I look at the needles and think the needles are pretty, and the needles look really pretty, and we made a really pretty design. When I did the first face needles, I felt really pretty, which was pretty cool. It was a different feeling in the situation. So definitely gonna give it a shot.
Yeah,
probably not with a mortuary needle. I'm probably going to save the mortuary needles for some fleshier part.
So badly.
No. I'm just saying, I'll save the mortuary needles for some safer spots, and go with my little my little small gauges to start, and then we'll move on to the fatter needles once we're braver and we have more skill. We definitely like having skill, and my switchy sister is super neurotic, so she's probably smiling hearing me say this on this podcast. But she's a 6 month scientist. She takes 6 months to collect all the research, and before she'll even consent to say yes, which I really appreciate, because I'd probably be dead without her being so careful in my life.
That is an incredibly responsible practice. I have a lot of respect for that, for her approach.
Yeah, I do too. And we have quite a cool, we have an accountability pod in our Needle set up. We're really just a small group of kinksters, and there was no one to guide us in the beginning. So we devoured everything that we could find on FetLife and a whole lot of medical professional help. And then the piercing guys in our community are not super keen to help the BDSM or the kinksters. And I can understand why. Like, it's super crazy when some chick comes to you to, you know, to ask how and where you should put a needle in a penis, you know, for play piercing. Like, I can understand that as a proper body piercer, you would be a little bit horrified by the questions that I sometimes ask for CBT. So it's been great, and we have an accountability team, so everything goes through a team of sort of six or seven people, and we all collab together, which has been really good from a point of view of growing the idea. And the idea is always fleshed out so beautifully before the actual scene, and then also having somebody who has decent scientific knowledge, she'll turn around and say, that's really not a good idea, I don't support that, and who isn't afraid to say that to me, I think is a bit revolutionary. And also the fact that I respect her enough to listen to that. So it's been great. It's been really awesome having them as a team, and makes the whole thing less solitary and less dangerous, because, you know, I can be a bit wild, but I'm not always that bad. You run, Rhapsody, you've got an organization that you're quite involved with, where you stay, and a dungeon that you are involved with. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that? And if there's some people that are listening that want to get involved there, how would they do that?
Yeah, so I own a venue in Lansing, Michigan called The Gallery. I'm actually in the midst of helping to transition from a single owner myself to a board-run nonprofit. We're working on that. That's this year's big project. We opened in 2022, in November of 2022. So it's a very small space. It's a very bespoke space. I love it. But we also have to, we have pretty high vetting standards as far as play there. We do a lot of education, and there are a lot of community groups that meet there, which is wonderful, and that was sort of the point. But we have all of our policies, our vetting policies, all that kind of good stuff is on our FET profile, and it's at The Gallery with a capital T and a capital G. And then we also have The Gallery Michigan is our Instagram. And aesthetically, I just really wanted a space that was really beautiful to play in, local, because we also have some gorgeous venues in Michigan, but they're just a lot farther from me than this one, right? 5 minutes versus an hour and a half.
For us, an hour and a half drive.
Yeah. Right. We're a little spoiled in Michigan. There are lots of great options and wonderful organizers doing work here, which is wonderful, right? It gives people lots of opportunity to find their spot. But The Gallery, I wanted something that was really aesthetically beautiful and fluid positive, and blood play positive. Because a lot of venues are now making spaces for that, and doing a really, really good job of it. It's just that we wanted one that was closer to us, and there was a space in the scene here where there wasn't any play spaces that were close to our city. So everything was pretty much an hour and a half away. But there are some gorgeous spaces in Michigan, and I do recommend anybody who's in the Midwest area to check those out, because we're spoiled for choice a little bit in Southern Michigan.
No kidding.
Yeah.
I feel like you guys need a house cat. Like, I feel like we really should connect. we have one dungeon. They really tried to to cater for as much as possible there. But the space is really small, and blood play in my community is quite frowned upon. So most of our open parties and stuff, and most of the venues, will be specifically no blood play or specifically no needles. So, we've also just had to create our own spaces. So it's lovely to hear that, venues are opening up and that they are more accepting, of this beautiful play, because I think there's an enormous amount of, and we've spoken about it at the beginning, of research that goes into it and preparation. And I don't think we should be ashamed or nervous to go into a space and have our intimate little corner and share our intimate little experience with our bottoms. I think we should be proud to own the space that we are in, and we don't require a huge amount. Like, this, I require far less than somebody who's flogging somebody, you know, and my cleanup is better and I'm not spraying stuff all over the walls and, you know, so... Yeah, so I think I'm just going to try. I think what I'm taking from all of this is just try and be braver about owning my space in public a little bit from a needle play perspective, because it's an incredible intimacy that I'm sharing with others, and I don't need to be worried about the kink. People have a choice to stay or to leave. So, but I think we also have as much right to be there as other kinksters.
I totally agree. Yeah. And unfortunately, even in our large community, I know I've felt this way, and at some parties and stuff, Rhapsody and myself, it, you know, lots of varying kinksters and stuff like that. And then somehow the ones who are into needles are still on the outside. And I always bring this up, but like the most common kind of kink in our area is there's a lot of rope players. And I always find it very funny where there's a lot less permanent risk, at least in my mind, for your average needle scene than there is for like a full tie up or even a partial suspension, like for rope. And yet the needle players are still somehow, you know, the kind of...
The edge players.
The edgy, yeah.
We're still edgy.
Hanging out in the forests doing our dark, creepy business.
We're also extraordinarily lucky to have some incredible rope educators in Michigan, though, too.
Oh, yeah. So, nothing against our rope people.
Well, and I think... Certainly not. I think, too, that there's trends that happen in the scene, right? There'll be... Everybody's into Florentine flogging, and now everybody's into rope, and now everybody's into needles and blood, and now everybody, right? And it just kind of, it just ebbs and flows, I think, too.
Yeah, and it's lovely to hear that you have such a big scene. It's a bit of a bucket list thing for us. Our scene's very new and growing, and we have some great rope spaces, and the rope guys put a lot of time into educating themselves, and I have a huge amount of respect for that in my community, because education's not sold as a necessity here. We still very much coercion and rape culture in our normal society, so consent culture's kind of a new thing. But it is growing, and it's so positive for us to speak to people and like you guys. Like, it's a bit bucket list. Like I said to you earlier, like, I think I'm now a poly sharps person. Like, I think I'm like literally systematically falling in love with all the European sharps players and all the American sharps players, because you guys are just so authentic about your kink, and you all come across like not this like domly one true way, you know, there's authentic research, authentic understanding, and it's really beautiful to be part of something that I believe in so much. So thank you. Where can everybody get hold of you if they want to reach out and contact you guys? Do you want to drop some socials on the podcast quickly for us?
Sure. Rhapsody in Blue 4. Is if you search the Rhapsody in Blue with the number 4 on Instagram is a good spot for me. If you're not on FET, if you are on FET, Rhapsody_in_blue is my FET name. And generally speaking, on FET, that's more of a follow space. You'll still be able to see my needles and things like that. But if you are interested in the gore, you have to follow me on Instagram, because that has all those rules against blood play, which I find silly, but that's okay. And then as I said, the Gallery Michigan, or the Gallery MI, is the venue. If you find me, you'll also find Banana Rampage. We're on each other's profiles and whatnot. They are at?
I am on Instagram at STU_banana. And I use that to answer questions for my clients and stuff like that, mostly for my professional life. But that one I check most often. I am a terrible at checking my FetLife regularly. It has become a joke where about every 6 months you'll get 100+ notifications from me liking and accepting the photos from like the past year, and then you won't hear from me for the next 6 months. Anyone is welcome to find me there. What is it? Is it banana_rampage?
Correct.
Yeah, banana_rampage on Fet.
And then my email is also a great one. Just Gmail is really accessible for most folks, even internationally. So my Gmail is rhapsodies.in.blue@gmail.com. And that's always a good place to find me too, if there's questions or things like that. And I do, as far as cold messaging is concerned, I do not mind as long as people come into the inbox respectfully and are, you know, genuinely seeking information and things like that. So I'm happy to aim people towards resources and answer questions if they are within my wheelhouse, and encourage folks who are curious and want to find resources to educate themselves. I do tend to point outward a lot more because we only teach a few things that we feel really, really confident in.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, I think it's really important that you only teach stuff that you feel like you have a solid command of, but I'm happy to answer questions and point people towards other resources.
Absolutely.
Love that, guys. Thank you so much for chatting to me tonight. I'm gonna say huge gratitude, respect, and it was a privilege to be in the same space with two players who I have huge admiration and respect for. So thank you for your time.
Thank you so much. And thank you, everybody who listened.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's great to be on here and talk to you about something that we absolutely love.
Yeah, guys, and for all my amazing bloody listeners, we are getting closer to Rain of Blood. These two incredible humans are going to be on our TOPS panel. They're going to have a chat and answer some questions that are top specific in April. So keep watching our page, keep watching our socials. We are really excited. Tickets are selling out fast. We have some amazing educators. We have some amazing demos. We hope you're all going to come and join us, and we hope that you stay sharp, and lots of love and kitten kisses from me in Cape Town, South Africa.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Thank you, incredible.